Hi, this is Larry Jordan, the host of the Digital Production Buzz. The following interview is an excerpt from a recent program. To learn more about our weekly podcasts, visit digitalproductionbuzz.com. On the front page of this morning's Los Angeles Times, the calendar section is an article on the South by Southwest Film Festival. And the article began by highlighting a film that's being featured at the festival. The film is called Kick-Ass, and it's edited by our next guest, Eddie Hamilton. Eddie joins us from London today, and thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. It's absolutely my pleasure. But I was co-editor along with a guy called John Harris, who's worked with the director a couple of times before, and Pietro Scalia, who's Ridley Scott's regular editor. So it was kind of teamwork, really, between the three of us. Although I have been the editor on the show longest. I started in September 2008, and today, as I speak to you, is my penultimate day on the movie.
Penultimate.
I know.
That's got a bittersweet feeling to it.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it's incredible. It's been such a ride working on this movie. It really has.
Well, tell us about the film.
Okay. Kick-Ass is an action comedy based on a comic book series written by Mark Miller and John Romita Jr. Anyone who's familiar with the world of comics will have heard of it. It's a kind of very funny, very original, very violent story of a 16-year-old kind of comic book nerd in a Manhattan high school who can't understand why people just don't go out and wear superhero costumes and do good deeds. And so one day he decides to do that, despite the fact that he has no superpowers whatsoever. And the film tells the story of his adventures, training, and then his first, experience being a superhero, and then meeting other characters and getting into trouble with the mafia in New York, basically.
Well, Eddie, a film that's great fun to watch is not always great fun to edit. What made editing this film such a challenge?
I've been working on it for a year and a half. Matthew Vaughn, the director, tried to get the film made by Hollywood Studios, but it's very controversial, the subject matter. There's an 11-year-old girl, the character's name is Hit Girl, and she, she's been trained to be an assassin by her father, played by Nicolas Cage. The young girl is amazing. She's going to be a huge star after this film comes out. Chloe Moretz is her name. And so it's very controversial, and it's very violent in places, and the language is pretty bad. I mean, in context, it's entertaining, but in isolation, when you hear it, you may think, "Oh, I don't know if I want to see this." It's quite controversial. So a lot of the studios just kind of steered clear of it. But what it meant is that Matthew went and raised the money, $40 million budget approximately, independently, so he could go and make the film that he wanted to make. And the exciting thing about this film is that it is a singular, undiluted director's vision, which is so rare nowadays. I mean, apart from, say, Scorsese or Chris Nolan or Tarantino or Spielberg, there's a handful of directors where you get to see an undiluted vision. And that's what you see when you watch Kick-Ass, which is great because it's not filmmaking by committee. And it's not homogenized in any way. It's exactly the film that Matthew wants to make, and he's very proud of it. But what that meant in the cutting room is that it took a very long time. We spent a long time on character development to make sure that you really cared about the characters that were there in these very difficult situations that they find themselves in the second half of the movie. You really care about the outcome, and you really feel for them when they're in danger. It was just a very, very long process. There are some very original sequences which, I guarantee you will have never seen before. There's one sequence in the middle of the film which features a kind of first-perspective shooter sequence, like a computer game. And there is a strobe. There's a clever use of a strobe light. And that sequence, the first cut of it took me about 6 weeks, and we refined it enormously. But, 6 weeks for something which is maybe four or five minutes long is a lot of work. So it did take a very long time. And we've been refining the edit for literally months and months and months. We had a very exciting screening of some clips from the film at Comic-Con last year in San Diego, where we got a standing ovation with 6,000 people. We were on after Avatar, and we thought it would be a graveyard slot, but the crowd there just loved it. And Matthew was then able to sell the film to the studios, who all had to pay quite a lot of money. There was a bidding war, and Lionsgate won in the end. Universal bought the rights for pretty much the rest of the world. But it's been a very long haul, and Matthew liked to try a lot of music on the film. I mean, we have tried hundreds and hundreds of pieces of music to end up with the finished kind of musical soundscape that we're happy with.
Eddie, take a breath.
That's all right. You were just asking me what's difficult, so there were a lot of, you know, why it's taken so long.
Let's take this one step at a time, because there's so much that you've done on this and so much that we can cover.
Yeah.
First, you've edited over 15 feature films. What system do you work on and why do you use it?
I have done basically, a lot of independent movies, very low budget movies that I started on. I've done a couple of studio films. I worked with Matthew Vaughn twice before, once on a movie called Mean Machine that was released was more UK based. And then I worked with Guy Ritchie on his film Swept Away, which obviously didn't do so well. But, you know, it was an amazing experience for me to work with him for 8 months on that. But I've always used Avid Media Composer since kind of 1995 when I started, really. And I it's a system which I find fastest and most reliable and allows collaboration best with other editors. And when you're working on a film, with other editors, you need to have a system like Avid Unity, which allows you to work seamlessly in one project and throw stuff, you know, around to each other very, very quickly. So that's my preferred system.
Well, let's take a look at specifically the workflow that you use, because as you mentioned at the beginning, you said there were really three editors on the project.
Yeah.
What workflow did you use? Who did what? And was there something special about the way that you were capturing your media and editing it?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty straightforward workflow. We telecine'd all our anamorphic 35mm rushes or dailies to HD cam. They were captured at DNX HD 36, which is, you know, Avid kind of low bandwidth HD offline resolution, which is incredible. The quality for the bandwidth is just, you know, it's astonishingly good. You can work at higher quality, but the bandwidth just starts getting eaten up enormously, so you start needing enormous amounts of storage. We've generated maybe 5 terabytes of media on this film overall, which I know by some Hollywood movie standards is kind of on the low end, but you know, I like being able to sort of keep on top of all that. So that's kind of what we did. I came on first and I worked on the assembly during the shoot. We shot for 2 weeks in Toronto and then 12 weeks in Elstree Studios, where Star Wars was filmed in North London, and a couple of days in Manhattan shooting establishing shots with helicopters and stuff. So I basically assembled the movie. Pietro joined me towards the end when he was finished with the movie, and he basically worked on the production for about 2 months, maybe 2.5 months, before he moved on to do Robin Hood with Ridley Scott. Fascinating working alongside him for a couple of months, you know, because I've watched all his films and I had very long chats with him about how he works and stuff. And then John Harris, who has worked with Matthew on Stardust and Layer Cake, his other two movies, joined the production kind of in about February, and we kind of worked alongside each other, and that's how it works.
You also used a lot of green screen in the project, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's right. Because Matthew likes shooting in London, there's the bad guy, played by Mark Strong. He lived in a penthouse apartment in Manhattan. And so his set, we built an enormous set on the George Lucas stage at Elstree Film Studios with, you know, cyclorama green screen and, with tracking markers on it. And that allowed us to basically make it look like we were shooting in a Manhattan penthouse apartment. But it was kind of much more effective, cost effective to do it on a stage. And one thing which we did on this film, which I've never done before, which I will certainly be doing on other movies, is we got all the Manhattan plates, which the visual effects company had taken high resolution stills of, imported them into the Avid, and then composited them in using the tracking markers, because the latest version of Avid has amazing motion tracking tools, and it's possible. And the spectral map here is incredible at you know, doing green screen work. And so we effectively mocked up nearly all the visual effects in the movie before the visual effects company really started getting their teeth into it. But it meant that we could watch the film and get a sense of how it was playing, you know, with the views out of the window. So you could really get a sense of where this guy lived, and it allowed us to feel the world of the movie better.
So basically you created a bunch of temp visual tracks to help visualize what the final result's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, we did hundreds of them. I mean, just so many. You know, there's a sequence at the end of the film where I was applying kind of individual little effects elements to sequence to shots. A lot of muzzle flashes that we added and digital sparks, you know, for when people are shot, lots of digital blood, all that stuff. We added on the Avid first to get a sense of how much kind of blood and guts we wanted on the screen before the visual effects company went ahead and did it.
One of the other things I read about was that you used a Western Digital Media box for screenings. What's the box and what does it do?
Yeah, this is really cool. If you want to find out more about it, you just Google WD for Western Digital space TV. And it's an amazing, it's $100. You can get it in Best Buy. It's a media player box that plays high definition QuickTime at 1080p, 24 frames per second, you know, full HD resolution. It has an HDMI connector on the back, and HDMI is effectively the same as DVI. And so what it allowed us to do is I would export an HD QuickTime from the Avid, just a bit of geeky technical stuff. I exported it 1920 by 1080, 10,000 kilobits a second, single pass, because I find multiple pass encoding on QuickTime doesn't really help. In RGB color space rather than 709. And that QuickTime movie I could play on the media player box and take it anywhere in the world and plug it into a digital cinema projector and basically show the film. And it meant that I didn't have to have an HD cam deck or a tape. It was very portable. The film fitted on, you know, it came out to be about, you know, 10 gigabytes in size. And the quality is astonishing. We played it in big, big movie theaters around the world. When, you know, at movie studios and stuff, it was incredible. And I was able to take the sound mix that I'd done on the Avid as a stereo file, basically, and play it through the cinema sound processors with their ProLogic decoding option. And it created a kind of left, center, right, and surround channel for the screenings. And it was just amazing. I mean, I would recommend every editor have two, just because it's really useful. And it saves on hundreds of dollars of deck hire whenever you want to screen the film in HD somewhere.
It sounds like a fabulous box, because now you've got portability and the ability to change your mind at any point and just download a different QuickTime file.
Yeah, I mean, it really is cool. It takes about, to be honest with you, it takes about 4 hours to generate a QuickTime of a two-hour movie. So it's not real time. But I would just leave them rendering at night when I went home, and then they'd be there in the morning if we wanted to screen it. But the other thing that I got, because I have all my own equipment that I use, I mean, we hired the Unity, but I have my own media composer. And I also have a media composer set up on a laptop with a Mojo DX, which is an incredible box that Avid have made, which is, you know, about the size of two hardback books. But it allows full HD SDI in and out with 16 channels of uncompressed audio, 24-bit audio. And you have a laptop adapter, and you can plug it into a laptop. We used that when we were basically doing 5.1 mixes. Right at the end of the film, we would take our you know, 24-bit 5.1 mixes of the finished sound mix or the kind of interim sound mix, hoover it into the Mojo DX, you know, onto my laptop, and we could take it to a, you know, to a proper movie theater and screen the film with uncompressed sound. So it really was amazing. And again, it's instantaneous because you can hoover the files off the Pro Tools and import them in 5 minutes, cut them onto the sequence, and then you're ready to screen. So you don't even have to, you know, play out to a tape or anything at that point. It's just great.
Eddie, the film opens April 16th in the U.S.
Yes.
What website can people go to learn more about what your work is like?
Well, I have a website, eddiehamilton.com. The movie's website is kickass-themovie.com, and the world premiere is, as you know, South by Southwest this Friday night. So keep an eye on the internet on Saturday morning, because there should be a lot of very happy, entertained people leaving that screening.
Eddie Hamilton is one of the co-editors of the film Kick-Ass, which, as you said, opens this weekend at South by Southwest. Eddie, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, Larry. Thank you so much.